Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and today we have an extra special guest, Barbara Berger. I'm so excited. I know you can feel me. I'm about to jump out of my skin. I'm so excited to have her as a guest on the show. Now, before we go to Barbara Berger, I just want to say to my new listeners, Reality Spirituality, this show is about our everyday life experiences and the link to spirituality. And this show provides you with strategies, tools, different ideas, different perspectives to maintain and sustain your happiness regardless of your circumstances. I am going to introduce Barbara. Are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
No, I can't. Of course I can.
You can? I hope so.
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, I can hear you. And I just want to welcome you. I would like to just get a brief introduction. Barbara is a American-born and a best-selling author, and she's written The Road to Power, Fast Food for the Soul. Now it's published in 30 different languages. Are You Happy Now? 10 Ways to Live a Happy Life. That's published in 14 languages. And The 10 Mental Laws, which the 10 Mental Laws, Barbara, is what, I found this, your 10 Mental Laws, because you had written an article on State of Appreciation. We have a mutual,
right.
Joyce Schaefer.
Right.
When I started reading it, I couldn't put it down. It feels so real and so true.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked to me, talked to my soul, and it was easy to read, easy to understand. And
great, I'm so happy to hear that.
I had to find out who you were and who is this. Mm-hmm. The Mental Laws, and this new book that Barbara has written, The Awakening Human Being, it's a guide to the power of mind.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book that I've read and reread and earmarked and highlighted. It's a great read, and to anyone out there who is interested in learning things that we didn't get these tools in school. So this is just phenomenal.
Great.
But enough.
I'm happy to hear it. I'm happy to hear that you got it, Rebecca. That's terrific.
Yes, yes. I've listened to your interview on Buddha at the Gas Pump.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I read and reread the book. But now I guess it's time for you to talk.
Well, I think that a good way to start would be to sort of just step back a minute and let me just introduce what it is that I'm working with. All the things that you mentioned are actually the manifestation of trying to understand and explain in clear, simple language the way the mind works. And the reason why I'm so obsessed, possessed, or whatever you want to say by this concept, by trying to understand the way the mind works, is I have discovered after many, many years of working with all kinds of therapies and different spiritual techniques, that the key to living a happy life is really understanding the way your mind works. If you don't understand the nature of mind and consciousness, you're actually a victim of forces, which is the mechanism of mind that you don't understand. So this information is so crucial to living a happy life, and it's really so crucial to self-empowerment, to taking control of your life. Up until the point where you have this information, you're more or less buffeted around by all kinds of things which you don't really understand. And as you were saying, the mental laws is sort of the, I tried to boil it down to, you know, a very simple, concrete explanation that anyone could understand. And actually, I've been working on this for many, many years here in Scandinavia, where I live. And people say, oh, we should be teaching this to our kids in school. And I hope it will happen one day. But at the moment, this information is not readily available. So therefore, we have put the mental laws on our website. So you can download, any of the listeners who are listening to our show, you can download the mental laws for free on our website, because we believe that this information is so important. We want to get it out to as many people as possible. So if you go on our website, it's beamteam.com, beamteam, beamteam.com. And if you go under the menu of my name, you'll see the mental laws, and there you can download what we're going to be talking about, some of what we're going to be talking about on the show tonight. The mental laws, it's really crucial information, vital information, if you want to take control of your life.
Yeah, that is exactly, it's the foundation, of the way the mind works. And like
it's
you
also
said,
because the most people today, still, most of us are so unaware of the way our minds work, and we're so unaware of the fact that we are so identified with our own thinking that we don't actually see that there is often, usually, quite a big difference between our thinking and reality, which is also a key concept in this new book, The Awakening Human Being. And because we don't see this, because we don't understand the mechanism, we often suffer. So really, my motivation, my goal has always been to find a way out of suffering. Right? I mean, we all want to live happy lives, and I mean, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, "Oh, I want to have a lousy day today." We all want to be happy now, and we all want to achieve our full potential, and we all want to be present in the moment, and we all want all the same stuff. But why isn't it happening? What's preventing us from experiencing the happiness that we seek? So these are the really important questions, I think, and that's really what I try to answer in that book, The Awakening Human Being. What's the key here?
And you not only answered the questions of what that is the key. The mental laws are the key, in my opinion. This is the key. So you're talking about the awakened human being. What does that mean to be awakened?
That's one of those words that's really getting thrown around a lot today. But what I mean by awakening, and another, I don't say, my book is not called The Awakened Human Being, it's called The Awakening Human Being, and it's quite done on purpose. By awakening, I mean awakening to the nature of consciousness and the nature of mind. In other words, the nature of reality, until we awake up, in other words, understand what it is, we are really, you could say, asleep, or we are anyway unconscious of the mechanism that is actually controlling our life and experience. So by awakening, I mean this process. Because in my experience, I know we've heard of people who have this sudden awakening, but in my experience, most of us, it's the long, difficult haul. And so I call it awakening because it's not something that just happens overnight. It's a process of becoming more and more aware of the difference between mind and experience and consciousness and starting to understand these concepts, what they really mean and how they actually play out in our daily lives. I know that you're also really into this about, I mean, spirituality and our everyday daily life, they are actually one and the same. The idea that spirituality is, you know, that's when I sit down and meditate over in that corner, and the rest of my life is something else. But that's also one of these misunderstandings, because all the information that is really valuable is useful in our daily lives. Otherwise, it's probably not that valuable.
Yes, it is. It is in our daily lives, and missing a bus is a spiritual moment.
I would say that all moments are equal. I mean, you could say, I think that's a great example, missing the bus. If you would say you can take any event that happens in the course of your day, and instead of, usually we have an automatic response. You know, you miss a bus and you say, oh, damn it. That's sort of an automatic response. And we have the idea that our response is determined by outer events. But if you start to look at that, that's a good example, missing a bus. I mean, there are many different ways you could react to the exact same experience. You know, it's like, oh, I get 15 minutes extra here to stand and breathe. Or, you know, maybe the bus is going to crash the one that I just missed. Or, I mean,
that's right.
Every event in our life, once we start to notice that there is no inherent value in any outer event or any outer circumstance, that what we actually are experiencing is our story about it, our interpretation about what this means in our life, then we start to get, that's like the key to freedom, you know, when you start to see, wow, I don't have to react automatically. I actually have a choice. I mean, choice is like, that's the key, that we actually have a choice. I mean, that's like really heady stuff, because up until we understand the mechanism, we don't think we have a choice. We're victimized. But when we see we have a choice, and we always have a choice, but we don't actually have the choice until we're aware of it. That's why this awakening thing is so important. Awakening is when you have this understanding, then you can start to choose.
Yes. And that is the key that our choice dictates, really our choices dictate our level of happiness. And what you said about
that. Well, I wouldn't actually even say that. I mean, I would say that our level of happiness is really determined only by our interpretation of any event. So you could say our interpretation is our choice, but in any situation, I always use that, you saw Buddha on the gas pump, and I can't remember if I used that example, but this is one that usually strikes home for people. I like to use the example of getting a divorce, and you know, like if we say, what is the reality of getting a divorce? Getting a divorce, the facts are that two people who live together under the same roof are now separating. That's what a divorce is. And one person has the interpretation that, you know, oh, I'm losing the love of my life. I'll be alone for the rest of my life. I'll never find love again. And when they have that interpretation of that event, then they become very depressed and they feel really sad and it's really a huge crisis and so on. And another person can have the interpretation, and I know this is true because it was my experience, and like, hallelujah, you know, now I'm finally free, I can live my own life. And with that interpretation, a divorce becomes a very liberating and happy thing. Mm-hmm. But in both cases, the reality of a divorce is two people who live together under the same roof are now each going their separate way. So the event itself has no inherent value, you can say. It's just what's happening. And then we have our interpretation of, is this good for me? Is this bad for me? Or whatever we think. And then that is our experience. And when we see that, it's like, whoa, right?
Yes. Yes, the interpretation. I love that clarification, the interpretation or the perception that what we put on it. You're absolutely right. I use the example of even having a death in the family. And my father died in 2008, and I don't know, it was the most, that day, the day of his service was the most wonderful experience, one of the best days of my life because of how I interpreted that event. I didn't, it wasn't about losing my father, it was about what the memories I had and the relationship I gained. So, and even with death, my son was with me, my only son was with me, and I felt the need to be an example of the interpretation of death. Death is not your world is over, your you know, life is over. No, it can be a loving, wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's also one of the issues that most of us have a lot of stories about. So again, since we know that we experience our interpretation, our story, so in your case, I hear you saying that you have really good neural associations, and so that you really experienced a lot of love, and it was a good experience for you. So that's most people don't experience it like that because they have lots of traumatic interpretations about, you know, losing someone, never seeing them again, being alone. So again, all those other things that come up, that's what people experience. But
yes,
that's true in every situation, Rebecca. It is. I mean,
yeah.
You know, like, I work as a therapist, so I sit with people every day, all day long, and people come to me when they're in crisis, and it's usually what I've learned from listening to people's stories for all these years is that when people are in crisis, they really have very catastrophic interpretations of the events in their lives. I mean, that's really sort of the definition in a way of crisis. For example, if we go back to either take yours, the death in the family or divorce, the person who comes in and who's really in crisis because of this kind of event, they have a catastrophic interpretation of what this means for them in their life. And usually, for example, if I go back to the woman who just, her husband just left her and she just found out that he's sleeping with someone else, or whatever that story is, her interpretation that, you know, I'll be alone for the rest of my life and I'll never find love again, and those things that the woman usually says in the beginning, then I usually sit down and I help her question these stories. You know, well, I understand that it's difficult today, but can you absolutely know that you'll never find love again? And can you absolutely know that you'll be alone for the rest of your life? It's like, of course you absolutely can't know that. And just sort of getting real about what you actually know in relation to your catastrophic interpretations, that in itself is usually enough to get people to just breathe a little bit more deeply.
Yeah.
Calm down. And, you know, it's just like, okay, getting real about what do we actually know about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And in your book, The Awakening Human Being, you, one of my favorite pages, you say you are not your thoughts or your stories.
That's really very interesting, isn't it? If you really can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the reason why I also start with the mental laws. If we go back to that, when I try to do my exploration of the nature of consciousness and mind, the first mental law is the law of thoughts arising. And in that discussion, as you know, I try to guide the reader so that, and the whole book is based on the fact, you know, don't believe me. I try to sort of spell it out so everybody can test this for themselves.
Yes.
So
yes.
I have that first exercise where, you know, sit in the chair and look at the white wall and tell yourself not to think. And nobody can do that because the nature of reality is that thoughts arise.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're a hardened meditator, you know that thoughts arise. Thoughts arise and disappear. That's the nature of mind, and we're not doing it. So that's a very important thing to understand, that it's an impersonal law that's just happening for all of us. And then getting back to what you were just saying, that we're not our thoughts. And the second law is what I call the law of witnessing, where I say, go back again to the chair and stare at the white wall and watch the thoughts arise and disappear. In other words, watch the thought come up, oh, I forgot to buy milk at the supermarket. My back is hurting me. Oh, I'm feeling tired today. And watch that these thoughts arise and disappear. And then notice that who's watching, who's witnessing, whatever you are, you're still there because you can actually observe the fact that you had this thought, oh, I forgot to buy milk at the supermarket, and then you can watch it disappear. And the fact that you can watch it arise and disappear shows that you're obviously not that thought because you didn't arise and disappear. You're still here. You're the one who's witnessing the thoughts coming and going. And that's what you just said, that we're not our thinking. This is the key to freedom, to understand that there's a difference between you and your story, that the thoughts arise and disappear. I mean, you're still there. If you've got a cold, you got a sore throat, you're feeling this, you're feeling happy, as you say, your father died, you got a divorce, whatever it is, it comes and it goes, but you're still here, whatever that is. And that's like, that's what spiritual awakening actually is about, discovering what is your true nature.
Yes, yes. The thing that I love about, well, I love this book, but what I love that you attribute, you give the attributes of mental laws. You say mental laws are like physical laws. They're they're an invisible principle, and they just describe how mental phenomenon operates. So they can be observed by anyone, and mental laws operate automatically, and they are impersonal. And
all of this, like what we're talking about, you can test it for yourself. And again, I mean, if you sit down and you look at a white wall and you tell yourself not to think, and then you find out that thoughts come and go, that this is true for everybody. I mean, everyone, I've been teaching this for years now, and everyone I've ever talked to who's tried it, they come to the same conclusion. Gee, it's really true. I'm not doing it. They came, this thought came, and then it disappeared. And then you can lead the person to the next thing, and that's just about the witness, to notice that the thoughts arise and they disappear, and, you know, and you're still here. I mean, again, you can test this for yourself. You can
see all
of this stuff, and because it's a law, I call it a law because it is, as you say, it's an impersonal mechanism that applies to everyone. It doesn't matter if you're Chinese, it doesn't matter if you're American, it doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States, it doesn't matter if you're the cleaning lady, it doesn't matter how old you are, how beautiful you are, how rich you are. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. It's an impersonal law, like the law of gravity is an impersonal physical law. I mean, if you stand up on top of a building and jump off, you're going to fall down. It doesn't matter who you are. And it doesn't even matter if you don't know about the law. I mean, the law of gravity works whether you know it or not. So if you jump off a building and hit the ground, you can't say, oh, I shouldn't have fell because I didn't know about it.
That's right. That's right.
You know, so it's the same with these mental mechanisms. They are affecting all of us, whether or not we are aware of them. And that's really one of the big things that people are waking up to today. We're waking up to the nature of mind and consciousness, and that's really, really good news. I mean, we're talking about the key to freedom. We're talking about the way out of suffering. This understanding is so crucial. Because if you go back to the nature of consciousness, or the nature of what we really are before the stories come. I mean, all of the great, you know, saints, mystics, whatever words you want to put on it, they all say that our true nature is this radiant, divine love, infinite bliss, you know, Satchitananda, whatever we want to call it. And really, then the question is, what is preventing us from experiencing our true nature? And there's only one thing that can possibly be preventing us, and that is our own stories. Excuse me? Okay, let me just finish. The stories that we tell the thoughts that we identify with, they are sort of like the clouds blocking the sun from shining. So we have these catastrophic interpretations of reality. We're lost in worrying about the future, or we're lost in regret over the past. We are so seldom present in this now moment, because when we actually have a glimpse of being present in this now moment, we all discover that we're all quite okay.
Yes. Well, let's just sit with that. That is just beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, I usually say to people, you know, like, I mean, the book that I wrote before this one was called Are You Happy Now? And that was the tagline was that was like, what is preventing you from being happy now? I mean, what? If you really ask yourself that question right here, right now, you know, Rebecca, you're sitting there in California. I'm sitting here in Copenhagen. Hmm. The people who are listening to us, they're sitting wherever they are. What is preventing us from experiencing the radiance of our own being right this very moment? And whatever comes up, whatever comes to mind, that's the story you need to look at. You know, oh, I'm too old, I'm too thin, I'm too fat, I don't have enough money. I mean, we have all that stuff, you know, I should be more productive, I should have achieved more, I'm not living up to, I don't have a boyfriend. I mean, whatever it is that comes up, you know, that's the story that's preventing you from experiencing the radiance of this moment, which is what you are.
Yes. Oh, I just, yes. Isn't it interesting? I you know, sometimes I just want to just shake people and, hey, wake up, wake up!
Well, that's not really our job, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's not. I just had to throw that out. No, it's not. But it's. I sure am glad that I have this information. I mean, it took me. Listen, I'm 56 right now. It took me a lot of decades, but I am so glad that I have this information now.
Well, I certainly understand. I feel exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And I mean, again, I think it's also really important to say that. That this information is no—it's no magic pill. It's vital information, but it demands. I mean, this whole process of awakening demands really a lot of work, and it demands, you know, constant dedication to understanding this mechanism, constant dedication to becoming more aware of what you're doing, noticing when you go off in your stories, learning how to question your story. I mean, there's so much work involved in making your dreams come true, you could say, or making a reality out of this information for you in your daily life. Again, it's not like, okay, I read this book or I got this understanding and now everything is transformed. I'd really like to say that because it doesn't work like that.
No, it definitely requires when I say work, I mean that in a good way. I mean, it requires diligence, and it requires to be conscious and to be aware. And let me tell you this, before this journey of consciousness and awakening, I was bored stiff. Let me tell you, I am never bored now. I always have something to do. I have always have something to work on or observe.
Yes.
Always. Oh, yes.
Good girl. I'm with you there. You can't possibly be bored when you know this. Start to know this stuff. I totally agree. I'm never bored either.
never. There's always something to look at and discover and then to adjust. And I love it. You know, you write in your book that, and we talked about everyone seeking happiness, but You say that most people seek happiness in the wrong place. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, I think that's really a good question. It's something we need to look at too in terms of our definition of what we're talking about. I mean, there's the unconditional happiness, or which is really the state of being itself, which is not dependent on anything. It's what we are to begin with. And then, but most of us are, you know, born into this world, and we live in a very materialistic society, and we have been programmed to believe that our happiness depends on outer events, outer circumstances. You know, if I get the right boyfriend, if I get the designer kitchen, if I have a great career, if I, you know, if I look gorgeous, if I lose weight, if I have more money in the bank, all of these outer things that we believe are the key to happiness. So we've been programmed to believe that our happiness is dependent on these outer things. And again, I don't want to be misunderstood. There's nothing wrong with having a nice boyfriend or a lovely husband. There's nothing wrong with, you know, having wonderful children and a nice home. But it's important to understand that these are all things which we cannot control, which come and go, which are impermanent phenomena, the phenomena of life which arise and then they disappear like everything else. So it's very anxiety-provoking or stressful to base your happiness on any of these outer situations, circumstances, or events. So so are you happy now? Again, you can enjoy your success or you can enjoy your good fortune, and it's lovely to be healthy and it's lovely to, you know, to be fit and all of these things, but your the inherent value of life, the true happiness that we seek is already us. So it's also this confusion that we need to look at. And that's why I also say that because we are so identified with the outer things, we actually miss the glory of the moment. And the other thing that we also do, which drives most of us really crazy, is that we have such unrealistic expectations also to the outer things about what it takes to live a happy life. So, I mean, that's a whole thing in itself, too. In other words, I got to be richer, or I got to be thinner, or I got, you know, all this stuff that you need to achieve, and then you'll be happy. You know, it's like, wow, you know, give me a break. You know, what about now? So again, the whole thing about, I mean, really, if you think about this now moment, if you couldn't compare now, this moment, with anything else, I mean, you would always be happy. I mean, because it's only the comparison to some, and that's also just a story again. It's a mental construction, you know. If I weigh, I mean, I've never met a woman who doesn't want to weigh at least 5 or 10 pounds less. I mean, that's like the you know, one of our favorite stories among women.
Characteristics,
you know?
Exactly.
You know,
yes.
5 or 10 pounds less, and I'll be happy. But it's like, is that true? What does your weight have to do with the joy of life itself? And again, don't misunderstand me. It's not because you can't be, you know, live a sane, healthy life and you can't eat healthy and you can't exercise. I'm not saying any of that. Of course we should treat our bodies well and live sanely, but that our value and that the meaning of life depends on these things, that's where it gets a bit crazy.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you're talking about external things, because what happens if you lose the husband? What happens if you lose the boyfriend? What happens if you gain the weight? Then that means you're miserable. So that really, it's a really good indicator of what you are valuing. You know, being able to lose it all. Can you lose everything and be happy? And the answer is, of course you can. But we weren't taught, or we weren't brought up to think like that. It is.
Well,
it's
also the nature of reality that things come and go. I mean, that nothing is permanent. That change is the nature of reality. That whatever arises disappears. That everything is impermanent. So we're really setting ourselves up for a lot of pain and sorrow, because it will all be taken away. Because that's the way it works. I mean, bodies come and go. They get sick, you know. They die, as your father did. I mean, it's like you can't. No matter how healthy you are, how many marathons you run, still, at the end of the day, the body is not going to last.
That's right.
Which also
That's
brings
right.
you to the deeper question, which is, you know, like, so if we're totally a body identified, then we're also setting ourselves up for a lot of sorrow.
Oh yeah.
So it's a very important thing to do is to start to notice that you are, in fact, more than your body. I mean, to being totally materialistic and identified with material things is very painful. So one of the things I've noticed, too, about, all, you know, I have all these clients and people who come to me, and, of course, my own life, too, is that it is all of these crises. You lose the husband or you lose the money or you get some kind of illness, which are the three main areas which people, you know, it's the big drama thing that happens, and then they're in crisis. It's also the great blessing of the universe because suddenly they feel so bad that they're actually willing to look at maybe my interpretation of what's going on and maybe my values and maybe my understanding. That crisis is always, it seems to me, always is the open door to transformation. And so many people say to me, you know, even though this is really, really was painful and I don't think I would like to do that again, it was actually the transformative moment in my life, you know, that I was so freaked out, that I was so scared, that I was so miserable, that I was willing to seek help, that I was willing to look within, that I was willing to take responsibility and try to find out what the fuck is going on, right?
Yes.
So that also brings us to another really important realization, and that is, who knows what's good or bad? You know, like I always say to people, you cannot see the end of all things. I mean, it's like what seems to be your worst nightmare or crisis, a few years down the road, you probably will look back and say, you know, that was the greatest blessing for me.
That's right.
Like, you know? So.
Well, I agree totally. I'm on this kick where this is my mantra. Everything that happens to be me is for my betterment, meaning I don't care what it is. I don't care health or financial or what it looks like outside. I don't care what it looks like. I know it's here to assist me to a, I don't want to say another level, but more, maybe more insight or more, it is actually there for my good. Honestly, my mother disinherited me. I mean, I didn't even plan on talking about this, but she disinherited me a few years ago, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I have a better relationship with her now because I can be honest. I can be honest.
Also, I would say that if it's true, and I think it's true, that God is all and God is good, if that's really true, then everything that happens must be for your good. And it's just only us that can't see, because we cannot, first of all, we don't know God's plan, or you could say the overall web of life, how we fit into it, but it's all one field, and the field is, you know, this Om Satchitananda, divine bliss, consciousness, whatever you want to call it. So God is all and God is good. So what you're saying has to be true.
Yes.
It has to be true.
Yes, I believe it is. And in fact, I was listening to your interview, and you said something about having an ear problem, I've been dying to ask you, so what's so good about that?
It totally changed my life, totally. I mean, it really has. I used to be a very active lady, running around doing a lot of stuff, and it was like God. He said, "Barbara, you got to sit quiet now." Sitting quietly, doing nothing. You know, it was like, whoa. Definitely changed me completely. For many, many, it's been very painful. I didn't just wake up the next day and say hallelujah, but.
Yeah, no, right.
Ten years down the road, I can see how much it has changed me.
I was really curious when you said that, the ear infection or the ear issue. I don't know if it was an infection or what, but
no, it's not an infection. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was really anxious to hear how, you know, how you looked at it or how you viewed it.
Well, in the beginning, I was totally freaked out in the beginning. I mean, the ear problem I have makes you dizzy, and so you can't do stuff. I mean, it totally freaked me out. I lost my business. I had a different business before. I mean, it totally changed my life. I have a son in California who lives in San Francisco. I still can't go there because I'm not allowed to fly with this because it has something to do with the pressure in the inner ear. I mean, we're talking about serious life changes. But it forced me to go deeper also, kicking and screaming the whole way. But the gifts of going deeper and really starting to question, you know, what is happiness? And also when you're forced to sit more still and you can't do a lot of stuff, you start to look at the present moment more. So thank you for asking these questions. It's very true, Rebecca.
Getting back to your, and thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing because I believe that we're all a lot more alike than we even realize. I mean, all of our issues, family issues, money issues, health issues, are basically the same. And
absolutely,
yeah, us sharing what's going
absolutely.
On is it helps. Others in
well,
the same
well
type.
I mean, also the whole thing about somebody like me who's a so-called, I've written all these books and I was a therapist, a so-called spiritual teacher. People have such naive ideas about someone like me, you know, that everything's hunky-dory in my life. And, I mean, it's like they get so shocked when I tell them about all the problems I've had. It's like, but the reality is it's the problems that have motivated me to be the spiritual seeker. The problems that are, it's actually... Somebody once said that pain is God's megaphone. I think it was C.S. Lewis said that. Yes, it's so true. I mean, whenever people don't come to therapy or people are not seekers when everything is great and, you know, their life is working out. It's the ones who are really in pain who ask the questions, and that's certainly true of me. I mean, I've had you saw a bit of that interview with me. I've had such a dramatic life, and I've been so far out and so freaked out. But it's also been what has motivated me to find out the things that I found out. So they, as far as I can see, they go hand in hand. They don't. A lot of people have the idea that spiritual teacher writers, everything is, you know, they're calm and they're always happy. I don't think so.
Hell no.
I don't think so.
No, but it's having this. Having the tools, having the mental laws, having the ability to know how the mind works, why the mind works. I mean, that's like being able to have the key to go through and experience anything.
But I certainly didn't start out with all this stuff. It took me really a lot. I'm a lot older than you. It took me a lot of years to find out all this. I mean, I grew up in America, as you know, and. I grew up in Washington, and I had a boyfriend in the 60s who got drafted to go to Vietnam, and I lived in Washington. My father worked at the Pentagon, and I was like 17, 18 years old, and it was not like really very popular that my father was this high military man. He had this daughter who had a boyfriend who didn't want to go to Vietnam, so I ran away from home and was underground for years and ended up in Scandinavia where we got political asylum. And, I mean, that was just the beginning, but it was like already then it was like, what's going on, you know? Like, I mean, I had this really turbulent start, and it was like, you know, what's this all about? Something is really radically wrong, and why is life like this? I mean, so it was like from day one, when I was 17, 18 already there, I was sort of thrown into this cauldron of traumatic events and, you know, political turmoil and the 60s and the drugs and all that stuff. And then it was like, okay, well, maybe it has something to do with the nature of consciousness. It took me a long time, a really long time, many years of many different experiences to actually get to the point where, oh, it has something to do with the way our mind works, until that realization really sort of hit home. So for me, it's been a really long path and a really bumpy road.
I think that it is a really bumpy road for myself also. I mean, listen, but that's when you really look at it, the bumpy road, it's a wonderful ride. It is the only way that you're going to get to this end. I mean, come on.
I know, we're so dense. It's like, you know, okay, it's like God said, okay, well, what am I going to do to wake her up? We need to shake her around a little more, right? She asked for awakening, but she ain't getting anywhere. So now we'll give her an ear problem. Maybe that'll do it. You know, it's like, that's true. And when you look at it from outside, it's got to be true because I have asked for it. That's what I want. I want to know. I want to be enlightened. I want to understand. But so what are we going to do, the universe says, to give her what she really wants?
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I say that the universe puts these carrots, I mean these poisonous carrots out there and dares us to take them. But it is true. These universe people, they're looking down and they're laughing. They're actually joking about all the shit they put us through. Look at her now. Watch her squirm. You know, watch her. Yeah, I believe it's a joke. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that out loud. No, but yeah, they are jerks. You know, disinheriting me. Yeah,
you mean they? I think I would probably say it like that. The they that you're talking about is us. There's nobody else out there, dear.
You know
it's
what?
All you're us.
You're absolutely right, and I created all of this, and this is exactly what I wanted to experience, and this is exactly the way I'm experiencing what I've created, and so why am I struggling?
Well, what's the answer? Why?
If I ever struggle, it's because I'm resisting what is, as opposed to surrendering. Yeah, as opposed to surrendering. So yeah. I'm in surrender mode all the time. Surrender, surrender, hands up,
good
hands
girl.
Up, take me in. Yeah.
Good girl. Yeah, because, I mean, what's the definition of suffering, you could say? Suffering is resisting this moment. Since there isn't anything but this moment, I mean, we're all just kicking and screaming and resisting for one reason or another, you know?
That's
so
right.
It is, as you say, that moment when you give up. Sometimes we do a bit, you know. It's like so lovely, right?
I want to go back to your. It seems like the hour is just flying by.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to your awakening, the awakening human being, and ask you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've noticed about this book and. You put a lot of you know, emphasis on the connection between our personal level of consciousness and the collective consciousness. Why is that important? And what does that mean, collective consciousness?
Well, if you go back to the nature of reality or the field, which is, I mean, like quantum physics has found out that there is this one unified field, which is us. I mean, everything is a part of this field, and that this field is conscious, awake. That's really what we are. But we are in our personal identities or our personal in this body experience. We are like a focal point in this field, but it's all one field. It's all connected. So. You know, we have all these ideas about, of course, we want to help make the world a better place and we want to make our contribution, and that's all well and good. But the real contribution, besides the outer work, is also the inner work, because by cleaning up our own consciousness, by purifying, by understanding the nature of mind, by understanding that the unconditional love that we seek is what we are, we sort of our vibrational frequency, our level of consciousness, that's what we can do something about. That's sort of like our task. But because the field is one field and we're all connected, then the quality of our consciousness, where we're the focal point, that influences the rest of the field. So that's why I also said before, sitting quietly doing nothing, which is what this ear problem, for example, of mine forced me to do, might somehow be the best contribution you can make to the world anyway. So in the book, The Awakening Human Being, I have that at the end. I call it the ripple effect, how the inner work that we do, the raising of our consciousness to a higher frequency, you could say, where unconditional love and compassion and acceptance and all these things that we are, that spiritual practice is about. I mean, working consciously to achieve higher states, it affects the whole field. Hello?
Yes. Yes, it does.
I hear this strange buzzing.
Oh, you do?
You?
No, I don't hear that. I don't hear that.
No.
Would you like to call Val back? I think we can go to our commercial.
You should do a hello? No, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Call Val
call
back.
Call in. Is, I'm going to call you back. I can't hear you.
Call back in.
Bye.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's the newest spirituality. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man. You got a question for RLM?
Hello. Okay, so you still
I'm
have
back.
That? Okay, you don't hear the noise anymore.
No, but there was suddenly. Suddenly, I couldn't hear you at all. But now I hear you fine.
See, I told you. I told you they're jerks. No. No. I am a jokester, but
I understood that, Rebecca. I understood that from the beginning.
Okay, good.
I picked up your energy from the beginning.
Okay. Oh, perfect.
This
your book, The Awakening Human Being, A Guide to the Power of Mind.
Well, maybe just before we end, could I mention the website again?
So if anybody wasn't listening
from the beginning. The book we've been talking about, The Awakening Human Being, the first half of the book is what I call the mental laws, and that's my mapping out of the nature of mind and consciousness. And as I said before, we think this information is so important that if you go on our website, you can download the mental laws for free. And our website address is beamteam.com, BEAMTEAM.com. And there you can download the mental laws for free. And you can also actually read, I think it's about the first 35 pages of The Awakening Human Being on the website. It's also there. Plus, you can order all our other books. There's a lot of different stuff you can do on the website, sign up for our newsletter. We send out, different sort of stories and articles all the time for people who are interested in this work. So please go in and have a look. And also, if anyone would like to work with me, I do telephone or Skype sessions. So I have quite a few clients who don't even live in Denmark. So just let me know. You can just contact me through the website.
And also, Barbara, you can contact her via email, info@beamteam.com.
Mm-hmm. Right,
at beam, BEAMTEAM.com. And so you have access to this fabulous, fabulous woman. And
thank you, sweetie.
I'm so excited. And thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. And maybe we can do another interview because I didn't even get to ask all the questions I wanted to.
Let's just schedule another show. It's fine with me. I mean, this stuff is my passion, so I can talk about it for days and days. So anything, yes. I've written a new book, which is not out yet in the United States, called Sane Self-Talk. And that would probably be a good thing to talk about maybe on our next show. And it's really about the practical application of, this information. What does life look like when you start to apply this new information to your life? And one of the things I've discovered that people find really helpful is that when we start to understand the nature of mind and the power of mind, we discover that we have so many inappropriate stories, catastrophic thinking, all of this stuff that really is driving us crazy. But then the question is, okay, so what am I going to replace it with? And that's where I've coined this new term, sane self-talk. So So what does sane self-talk look like? What is when you're not into catastrophic thinking anymore, when you stop generalizing, when you start to focus on the moment and notice reality, what is your inner dialogue going to look like then? And, you know, and that to cultivate sane self-talk leads to what I call psychological maturity. That, in other words, when we become more mature, we have a more realistic understanding of what life is. We don't have such insane expectations to, you know, how thin we should be or how rich we should be, or we don't depend on, our happiness no longer depends on achieving all these things in the outer. We learn to take better care of ourselves. We understand that we have inherent worth, whether or not we're rich or poor, whether or not, you know, we're young or old. I mean, what does it look like? What does sanity look like when we start to understand the way our mind works and what we can do with this knowledge? Because one of the things you find out when you start to watch what you're doing is that we're all having this inner dialogue all the time. We're all talking to ourselves nonstop. But then when you start to listen to what you're actually saying to yourself, the first reaction is that was for me when I first discovered all this thing, I was like, oh, my God, you know, am I really telling myself all this?
Yeah,
it's frightening. Because when you know what the power of the mind is, you know that that inner dialogue is creating your experience. And if you wonder why your experience sucks, you want to look at your inner dialogue. So sane self-talk is the... You know, I thought it was necessary and important to say, well, how does it look? How does the sanity look? How does happiness look?
Yeah.
So maybe we could talk about that.
I would love to talk about that. And I want to add to that, how does sanity look? Even how does it feel?
It feels good.
It feels great. It feels...
Yeah.
Peaceful. It just feels relaxed. Your shoulders. You go through life with your shoulders down.
Yeah.
Deeper breath.
I like
breath.
To say it's like it's the downstream. You know, instead of paddling upstream, and suddenly you're just floating downstream. And it's this relaxation of just, you know, wow, what a trip. And this is my life. And you know, groovy. It's like, okay, man. So, yeah, we have a lot to be thankful for.
Perfect. Well, I want to say again for my audience, you can contact Barbara Berger, email info@beamteam.com or her website, which is beamteam, BEAMTEAM, one word, .com. And we're going to set up another interview. That's just a promise and a threat.
It's not a threat. It's only a promise.
Okay. Good intention.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes.
And keep up your good, wonderful work. And if you ever come to Copenhagen, please let me know.
Oh, you're going to be the first one. In fact, I will plan a trip. I will plan the trip right to your house.
Okay,
Barbara,
dear.
thank you so much.
God bless you and thank you.
God bless you and everyone. You've been listening to Reality Spirituality.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
Reality Spirituality.
It's the newest spirit.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one. You got a question for RLM?
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Reality Spirituality.
Oh, now we get real.
Getting real. Spirituality.
Yeah, time to get down.
Reality Spirituality.
You don't feel.
good.